Künstliche Intelligenz ist die Schlüsseltechnologie der Gegenwart. Und Google ist ein Unternehmen, das versucht, sie weiterzuentwickeln und zu nutzen wie wenige andere Unternehmen. Was der Konzern vorhat, wie er vorgeht, welche Chancen es gibt, welche Risiken, darüber wollen wir heute sprechen. Und zwar mit dem Vorstandsvorsitzenden von Alphabet und Google selbst, mit Sundar Pichai.
Generative KI hilft Unternehmen dabei, schneller, innovativer und effizienter zu werden. Doch wie können alle Mitarbeitenden diese revolutionäre Technologie im gesamten Unternehmen nutzen? Bertelsmann setzt dafür auf eine gemeinsam mit Deloitte entwickelte Plattform auf Basis von Campfire. Diese dient nicht nur als konzernweiter Software-as-a-Service-Marketplace, sondern auch als Distributionsplattform für eine Vielzahl von generativen AI-Anwendungen. Jetzt mehr erfahren auf deloitte.com/bertelsmann.
Und herzlich willkommen, liebe Hörerinnen und Hörer, zu einer neuen Folge unseres FAZ Digitech Podcast. Mein Name ist Alexander Armbruster und ich moderiere heute zusammen mit meiner Kollegin Corinna Butras, Korrespondentin hier in Berlin, wo wir auch diese Aufnahme machen, für Digitalpolitik zuständig und auch mit Technologie schon lange befasst. Hallo Corinna.
Ja, hallo, lieber Alex.
Und ich wechsle jetzt ins Englische und wir wenden uns unserem Gast zu. Dir, Sundar Pichai, welcome to the FAZ Digitech Podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate you doing this.
Sundar, I'd like to start with this. Which AIs do you actually use in everyday life?
You know, one of the interesting things about AI is how over time, when we use AI, we take it for granted and stop thinking of it as AI. I remember in 2015 when we announced Google Photos, the entire product was made possible because of AI. You could search your photos suddenly and you could find everything. I still use it all the time now that I'm traveling through Europe. I've been sending pictures. It shows me pictures from my last trip here. All of that is powered by AI, and you know, I enjoy using that. Google Lens is one of my favorite products. We get over 12 billion visual searches every month. You know, where you can just, it's again powered by image recognition. So you can use your phone, point your camera at something, and ask questions. So those are all examples. I've been using Bard as well. And, you know, this notion of being able to talk to AI directly and have it give creative answers, I think is something I enjoy a lot as well.
And how are you using Bard? I mean, German users don't know it yet, so we have no chance to have a look. What are you using?
Today, I use it for more creative queries. So a while ago, I had to plan my father's 80th birthday, so I asked Bard, what should I do? You know, mostly good at things I knew, but it was nice to see it in one place. But it suggested I make a scrapbook. And just gave me a direction, and you know, so I worked on that, and you know, got that done. So it's a nice companion, I think, as you're thinking about things. But I'm excited. We are also bringing the experience in search, the generative experience in search. So I think you can use it any way you want, and you know, we are working very hard to bring Bard in Germany, and So stay tuned. We'll be there soon.
Are there some secret AIs that help you run Google?
Well, I think, we are beginning to use AI internally to help our engineers code. So that's one way we are beginning to help. We deploy AI in many scenarios. I mean, we use it to make cool our data centers more efficiently. We are increasingly using it to improve customer service, to get better analytics inside the company. So we are in early stages of using it, but we'll continue using it more.
Pretty much 6 years ago, you said the phrase, we are now witnessing a new shift in computing, the move from mobile first to an AI first world. How has that manifested itself within Google? What happened since then? Is there any project or product that is without AI anymore?
You know, 7 years into our journey now as an AI-first company, and I think we started seeing the inflection point about a decade ago, when for the first time these computers became really, the AI systems became really good at image recognition. And so to us, that was, a breakthrough moment. And that's part of the reason, understanding there's a deep platform shift. You know, I pivoted the company to be an AI-first company. Pretty much since then, we've been driving the state-of-the-art research in developing AI. And each given year, we've been incorporating that into our products. That's why if you take Gmail, as I spoke about at Google I.O., we launched Smart Reply, a few years ago. Then the technology got a bit better. We added Smart Compose. And now with generative AI, we are doing Help Me Write, right? And the feature in Gmail. So to me, thinking about AI and applying AI to make it more helpful for everyone in the context of the products people use is something how we think about how we should innovate. And, we've been very focused on it. And I don't think our goal is to put AI for AI's sake. It is just one of the most powerful technologies available to actually make your products better. So still, we are still trying to solve user problems, but AI turns out to be a pretty powerful way to do that.
Right now, everyone is talking about the large language models like Bard, ChatGPT that can handle text and increasingly images with amazing versatility. Would you say that these AIs are actually starting to understand language the way we humans do?
I think comparison to humans is always, it may not be the right analogy, I think.
Why is that?
These are different systems. Mm-hmm. I think, what is understanding is a deep question. Mm-hmm. How do humans understand? What do we mean when we say we understand language? I think are deep questions. Today, these are next word predictors. Mm-hmm. That's how these large language models work. And they can show a deep sense of understanding, if you will, but they can also get things very, very wrong. And so I think the technology at the current stage, at least, I won't necessarily call that they have a deep understanding, but they're very effective in many things they do. But maybe that's the way to think about it. But the state of the art is constantly changing. So I think these systems will get much better. But there are many tasks for which they are very, very good. If you give a long document and you ask it to summarize, they can do a very, very good job of summarizing that document most of the time. That's the inherent property of these systems today.
An important element of these models, the so-called transformer architecture, so the T in GPT, for example, was actually conceptualized and popularized by researchers of Google a couple of years ago in a famous paper. And then there is the company OpenAI, with the help of Microsoft, who achieved the great public and possibly also commercial success. Do you regret that you missed a huge opportunity there?
We've been working on this for a long time. And, so for me, I view this moment as, it's a point of inflection because we realized users are excited to interact directly with large language models. They want a conversational interface, a chatbot interface, and ChatGPT showed that there is excitement around that. And, and so we've been working on the underlying technology for a while. My sense is we would have done something similar in a different way, maybe in a different time. But technology is full of these moments where, you have these moments in which something comes and that's how it works. And, I think we were not the first company to do search. We were not the first company to do a browser. We were not the first company to do a mapping product. I think all that matters is that you're focused on users and you're able to innovate and build upon. Mm. And so, I take a long-term perspective. We are in such early days of this technology. And so I'm excited at the road ahead.
Still in such early days?
Yeah, very, very early days. And, if you think about the internet in the early 90s, Google didn't even exist when the internet came about. The company hadn't even started. So think about AI now. And, we are all in very, very early days. There'll be new companies built on AI which don't exist today and which will be very, very successful. Mm. That's how early it is.
But what did you think when ChatGPT opened basically or were, was available so quickly for pretty much everybody in the world. Were you alarmed? Were you interested? Were you excited? Were you disappointed?
You know, because internally we had a conversational dialogue product called Lambda, which we were playing with. And so I was very familiar with the product of what these things can do. I think I was pleasantly surprised at how excited people were to use it. You know, I thought maybe the technology still had a little bit more time left to be mainstream. But I think, you know, so I was pleasantly surprised. But, you know, I also found the moment exciting because we knew we had cutting-edge technology to be able to do this. And so I started focusing on, well, how do we take what we have and apply it across our products? Mm. And that's what you saw at Google I.O., you know, we literally across our products from Search to Gmail to Google Docs to Photos to Android to Pixel, you know, we've been able to bring in those AI capabilities. So to me, you know, so I viewed it as an inflection point and a very exciting moment for innovation at Google.
But you have a totally different approach with BART, right? You go step by step very cautiously. Why is that the case?
A few things, a few reasons. First of all, you know, we wanted to make sure people come to Google with a lot of trust, and they're looking for high-quality information. We realized with these models, you can now answer and do newer things than before. They can be creative, imaginative, but they don't always get it right. Mm. So for us, it was important to take the right steps to help users understand that. And then we wanted to learn and iterate, I think. And so we've been comfortable approaching it that way. BARD, you know, the thing that I like about BARD is it keeps getting better every 4 weeks. And from the time we launched, we've added many new capabilities. We've upgraded the model underneath to PaLM 2. It's much better at coding, math, and reasoning. And we plan to add more capabilities over time. And so I think that approach serves us well, but we'll continue iterating and making it better.
But wouldn't you say that ChatGPT in combination with Microsoft's financial firepower isn't maybe the biggest threat to the business model of Google since Google existed?
I mean, I definitely don't think of it that way. You know, it feels very far from a zero-sum game to me. You know, going back again to my question around the start of the internet, you're literally at the start of AI. I think we are one of the leading companies in the world in terms of how long we have worked on AI, the capabilities we have with AI.
And because of that, you should have been the first one to introduce this technology, right?
Not necessarily. As I said, we were in the first to build Search. And yet you always wish, you know, for every time there is a successful product, you wish you were the first to do it. But it won't always be true or it won't always be the case. But I think all that matters is you have users coming to you and you're able to serve them well and innovate and make progress. And we see today, you know, post the launches of all this, I see the excitement, I see the usage across our products, and they continue to be, you know, people continue to rely on us for the types of use cases they care about, and we are making it all much better with the new search generative experience. So, you know, I see it as I'm excited because now search can do more things than it has been able to do in the past. So I view it as an exciting moment. So I see it as a big opportunity for us.
But there's also risk. You have already touched the problem of, you know, that those machines are getting it wrong. You call it hallucinations, right? This is like a term that's fairly often used in technology to just show that those machines are lying or getting things wrong. How do you approach this problem? How can you actually diminish it? Is it possible to ever have a machine that is not hallucinating?
I think we are all making progress. It is still an active area of research, but the work we have done around alignment using techniques like reinforcement learning with human feedback, you're able to get these models to be more aligned with the type of answers users would expect. And so we have definitely made progress, but it's not a fully solved problem, which is why we want to put it in areas where it makes sense for users, right? So if you're asking for 20 name suggestions for your new dog, makes a lot of sense. But if you're in search and you're coming and saying, you know, what is the medicine dosage for a three-year-old, you definitely don't want to answer it with a large language model. So part of it is getting these use cases right and being deliberate about when and where you use them and making it clear to users when they're using these, well, they don't always get it right. And so if you're in Gmail and we are helping you compose an email, we're just creating a draft for you. That's okay, you know, and you are in control. You see it. That's okay. But tomorrow, if I come and ask about the history of Berlin, you know, I want that to be factually right.
Yeah.
Right. And so there, you know, we are doing techniques to improve this by we use language models. But in search, we'll combine it with the power of our ranking quality work we do to ground it in information, high quality information from search. So that is one way by which we can make sure we are making the outputs of these models better.
Have you been betrayed by Bard?
I won't use the word betrayed because I understood what it's doing. It's definitely, there are times, you know, it has, I'm looking for something and it'll say something. And then later I'll realize, okay, maybe that thing was not correct. And, you know, but this is why in Bard we have a Google it button. You can easily check it against Google. But yes, for sure. That is the state of the art of these models have these issues.
So now when you look at Germany and think of AI, what is the first thing that comes to your mind? A good customer or weak competitor? Or
I think the most important thing that comes to my mind is it's a once-in-a-generation opportunity for Germany. You know, Germany is a very strong economy, has an extraordinary industrial base. The ability to transform and stay competitive is going to depend a lot on how you know, Germany embraces AI. And so I see it as an opportunity. And we see that from our, you know, there are many companies here whom we partner with, particularly they are interested in getting access to AI through Google Cloud. And, you know, companies all the way from Volkswagen to Lufthansa to Siemens to E.ON to startups. And so there is a, you know, there's a sense of excitement. And so I think the ability to responsibly innovate with AI, I think is both an opportunity and it's an important transition for Germany to get right.
How about the regulation? The European Union is working on an AI act. You've said, you know, you can't introduce BART, if I understand correctly, to the European Union yet because the regulation is so high that you still have to find a way to figure out how. Is it correct? Or
two things. We want to make sure, you know, we want to get BART. We have a high bar and we want to get it right in all the languages and the countries we are launching. So we are working very hard. We also want to comply with all the existing regulations. So we're just taking a little bit more time, but we are very committed to launching as soon as possible. So we will.
Yeah. But it's hard to commit to European standards, I assume.
You know,
it's harder than in other regions of the world.
I think there is extra work that needs to be done, but you know, I don't view it as it's harder. I think the bar is high, and that's good, and we are working hard to get it right.
And how do you see the AI Act and the work the European Union does in this area? What do you think?
You know, long said this, and you know, recently I spoke about the importance of regulation for AI. That AI is too important not to regulate, and too important not to regulate well. So I think there are many provisions of the AI Act, you know, which from the Commission, which takes a proportionate, risk-based, and a use case-based approach to AI. I think which balances innovation and responsibly regulating AI. I think it's important to continue to keep that balance as the AI Act progresses. You know, making sure that it doesn't overlap and create complexity with respect to existing statutes, be it GDPR, be it DSA, as examples, and making sure it is, today these AI technologies are used anywhere from recommending a nearby coffee shop to being used for high-risk applications, be it in self-driving cars or be it in healthcare, recommending treatment options. So I think you have to really take that use case into account, and so that you know, otherwise it could affect innovation too. And as I said, it's an opportunity for Germany and Europe in general too. So I think you have to get that balance right. But I think, you know, I think it's important to be very responsible around AI innovation, and regulation will play a very, very important role in that.
Generative KI hilft Unternehmen dabei, schneller, innovativer und effizienter zu werden. Doch wie können alle Mitarbeitenden diese revolutionäre Technologie im gesamten Unternehmen nutzen? Bertelsmann setzt dafür auf eine gemeinsam mit Deloitte entwickelte Plattform auf Basis von Campfire. Diese dient nicht nur als konzernweiter Software-as-a-Service-Marketplace, sondern auch als Distributionsplattform für eine Vielzahl von generativen AI-Anwendungen. Jetzt mehr erfahren auf deloitte.com/bertelsmann.
When you say we have to get this balance right, is it so it is not right at the moment? Our impression in many occasions is that we have too much bureaucracy, or to put it another way, that that we in Europe produce the rules and you are producing the products, and we would favor it maybe to be the other way around, or a bit more the other way around.
More balanced, maybe.
Yeah, more balanced.
I definitely see, you know, coming to Google offices in Europe, including in Germany, I see a lot of innovation happening out of our offices here. I've met entrepreneurs and startups building extraordinary companies based on AI. I see all your large companies trying to use AI. I think, you know, there's a lot of innovation happening here. My point is, when there is a new technology and at its early stages, I think it's responsible to think about regulating it, but you have to balance to make sure you're creating that framework which allows for experimentation and innovation, and it's important to get that balance right.
But we still have no big internet company in Europe. And for years, many politicians and people say we need to have this.
I mean, there are. I mean, last I checked, Spotify is definitely a important consumer internet company from Europe, to use as one example.
But it's tiny compared to Google or Meta or Apple.
But you have, extraordinary companies in other sectors which use technology a lot. You know, like we are partnering with companies like Mercedes as an example, or, you know, these companies are at the cutting edge of how they use technologies, including like AI. We are partnering with them on that. And but to your point, to continue creating the next generation of companies, I think it's important to get the balance right too, I think, which is why at an early stage of a technology like AI, getting that balance right is going to be critical to foster the next generation of entrepreneurs and companies, including in Germany.
And we understand you are in talks probably with Brussels and Berlin about future regulation. Do you think that's a common approach that you can find?
I think one of the strengths for Europe could be its digital single market. And I think it's helpful to the extent you can create a uniform regulation across the single market. So if you're building a startup in Europe, then you have access to the market, of hundreds of millions of users in Europe as a base to grow, right? And I think that's important. So, you know, I think it's important to make sure there is harmony across the various things, across the countries being considered. And so I would say that is an important element to get this balance right as well.
A couple of weeks ago, a large group of researchers and entrepreneurs, including Elon Musk, for example, or Max Tegmark, advocated not developing large AI models for 6 months, not making them more powerful, because they are very afraid. They call for us to first understand much better how they actually work and what follows from them. And Jeffrey Hinton, who just left Google, is now also warning. Where do you stand on this discussion?
I think there are very thoughtful people who have been speaking about risks with AI for a long time. And I think there's a range of risks from immediate current day risks, like making sure these systems don't discriminate, don't have bias, they are safe, they don't compromise privacy, to the longer term risks around potentially systems which we may not be able to fully control, right? And then the consequences of that. So I think there's a range of risks, and I think it's important to take them seriously. And I've always shared, both a sense of optimism about all the possibilities that AI brings, and the risks if we don't get it right. And all technologies have dual use, and AI, it's one of the most profound technologies we are working on, and definitely has both benefits and risks. And so I share some of the concerns as well.
But you're not pausing. You're not getting on the brakes too.
I think even the people who wrote, many of the authors behind the letter, I think they viewed it as a way to start a conversation. Mm-hmm. I think the exact specifics of it, I don't fully see eye to eye, because what does it mean to pause today in that context? How do you make sure everyone is pausing?
Mm, yeah,
it's just very, very difficult to fully...
Especially Elon Musk, right? Can you be sure that he's pausing?
I mean, he has been very, very concerned about AI safety for a long time. And I think so these are good conversations to be had. And I think over time we have to figure out how do we develop AI in a safe way? And so I think that to me is the key point. And I think it's good that we as humanity, we are concerned about it and we are beginning to have conversations. Over time, we need many stakeholders into this, not just companies, governments, academic institutions, nonprofits and other stakeholders. So I think, and we need to figure out international frameworks to cooperate across countries. These are powerful technologies. And so I think it's a good conversation to be having.
And China has to be part of this, yes?
In any international framework over time to be effective, no different from climate agreements, I think would need to involve all the major players. And so I wouldn't expect AI to be any different for it to be truly effective.
But you're not obviously very confident that China is actually also being part of the game in terms of looking cautiously on AI?
I'm sure China is thinking through this technology like every other country too. My point is, over time, we have to create an international framework like we have done with other powerful technologies. But it's not, we're not going to get there soon, but you maybe start with, I saw the G7 communique included, language around AI, which to me is a great start. I think you use forums like that to get more and more countries aligned, start developing frameworks, and over time that leads to the next thing. But I'm glad we are getting started, and that's important.
Obviously, we all need to be more familiar with computer science, not with AI only, but with computer science in more general, and almost all experts agree that this should start in school. So what do you think should be on the curriculum for this?
I think getting familiarity and exposure to computers and AI, I think will be important as skills for the future. Doesn't mean you need to be a programmer or an engineer. I think, if anything, I think AI will benefit from involving people from other fields in AI, including philosophers and social scientists and so on. I also think it's going to be a lot easier to learn programming over time. One of the things AI itself will accomplish is you know, we'll bring a natural language interface to programming too, which will make programming more accessible to more people. And so if I were to think ahead to the future, I think programming will be much easier, and almost, you know, most people will have some competency because they can just describe in words and the computer can do the hard task of getting the programming done. So I think it's going to become more accessible to more people, just like the internet and the web and the bloggers, etc., you know, made it easy for anyone to write an article. You know, we still value what journalists do. We still value what journalists do, but you know, it just makes it more easy. I think that's the history of technology in general, and you know, the same thing will happen with programming too.
I'd like to conclude by asking you this, Sundar: the great dream of those people who once founded the subject of AI was actually to construct a computer that would be equal to the human brain. Today, we sometimes call this artificial superintelligence or general AI. How far away are we from that?
General AI is not that well defined, you know. But I think what is important to say is, are we going to have highly capable systems which are super intelligent? Yes, the answer will be, you know, you already have in certain areas, these systems are super capable. If you think about chess or Go, we have super intelligent systems already. We are working on a 1,000 language initiative using AI. Part of it is so that AI can really help bring the benefits of everything to people in every language, even languages which are only spoken by a small community of people. And so when you have an AI which can seamlessly go between 1,000 languages, would you call that super intelligent? I think so. I'm yet to meet a human who can speak 1,000 languages. But it's something to be excited about because it can really help us. So I think you're dealing with super intelligent systems already today, and they will continue to be more and more capable.
Thank you very much, Sundar Pichai, CEO of Alphabet and Google, for being with us today.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Karina. It's a real pleasure.
Generative KI hilft Unternehmen dabei, schneller, innovativer und effizienter zu werden. Doch wie können alle Mitarbeitenden diese revolutionäre Technologie im gesamten Unternehmen nutzen? Bertelsmann setzt dafür auf eine gemeinsam mit Deloitte entwickelte Plattform auf Basis von Campfire. Diese dient nicht nur als konzernweiter Software-as-a-Service-Marketplace, sondern auch als Distributionsplattform für eine Vielzahl von generativen AI-Anwendungen. Jetzt mehr erfahren auf deloitte.com/bertelsmann.